Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said his forces are preparing for new Russian attacks in the east of the country after Russia suffered setbacks near the capital, Kiev. Now, as the invasion enters its fifth week, Russia has been accused of shelling a Red Cross facility in the stricken city of Mariupol. In a moment, I'll speak to Belle True from the London Independent and later Scott Lucas, associate at UCD's Clinton Institute and Professor Emeritus at the University of Birmingham. Now, before I came on air, I spoke to Maria Abdiva, director of Ukrainian think tank UA Experts, and Maria has been documenting what is happening in her city, Kharkiv. I asked her to tell me about her city last night and what she has seen this morning.
Yeah, so last night was very intense after the results of the negotiations were announced. So after these peace deal started to be discussed, the possible peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. Russia intensified its shelling of Kharkiv especially. So yesterday, starting early afternoon and then throughout the evening and in the night, the shelling was very intensive. And then very worrying message appeared on Russian state media, Russian state agency. They have posted a message saying that Kharkiv is in a very critical situation, that Nazi battalions in Kharkiv are shelling the city, and that's why the city needs help. And this is really what worries me a lot, because there are no Russian troops in the city, and they shell the city from outside. But the thing that they post that on Russian state media might mean that Russia is preparing some kind of offensive in Kharkiv. And that was circulated all over Russian state media network.
So you're concerned that there might be a ground offensive on the way?
Yes, that's my concern. So we have heard and seen that Russian troops had no success on the ground in Kiev and in Chernihiv, and they withdrew some of the troops to the territory of Belarus. And that means that, for me, that there is a high possibility that they might concentrate, on the eastern part of Ukraine.
Maria, do you have any sense of the impact of that shelling yesterday evening and overnight?
What we have now, what results we have for now, is that the gas pipeline was broken, and that means that the city, well, the big area, the big residential area in the city, might be now without gas supply. And the fire was there all the night, because it was seen from almost every district in Kharkiv, because it was really high and intense. About the residential areas, the destruction, not clear numbers, but the shelling was very intense.
I'm just going back to what you said, you know, this concern you have around a ground offensive. Is there any indication that troops are either traveling or are outside or close to the city of Kharkiv?
No, we don't have any this kind of information yet. So what is the situation right now on the ground is that Russian troops are on their positions outside of Kharkiv to the north and northeast, and the very heavy fights are right now in the city of Izum. So this is the city to the east, to the east of Kharkiv. And that means that over there, the fight is very intense, and Russia might try to get additional troops and additional support to that part. And additionally, also probably try to attack Kharkiv again, because we don't have this at the moment, but it might happen in the coming days, because this might be one of the scenarios that will be realized from now on.
And NBC is reporting that Ukraine has taken back territory near Kharkiv. Another Russian colonel has been killed also in Kharkiv. So does that give you some confidence that perhaps the Ukrainian military can force the Russians to retreat?
Well, I hope so, because what I hear from the military is that they are very effective in the counter-offensive operations, because some small villages outside of Kharkiv were liberated from Russian troops, because they were previously occupied, and now Ukrainian forces have control over them. It all takes much effort from Ukrainian side, because it's not easy to do. But then they are troops, Ukrainian troops, go in that direction and force Russian troops to go back to the Russian border. But still, my concern is that Russia might bring additional reserves, and they will for sure continue terrorizing the city by constant shelling, because that's what we see for the next, that's what we see for the previous days.
Maria, what is the humanitarian situation? Do you still have ease of access to food, to supplies, to water?
It very much depends on the district, on the area, and the districts that are very heavily shelled in the residential areas that are to the outskirts of Kharkiv, that is Saltivka and others. So there is nothing. People do not have any electricity, water supply, any heating. The situation is very difficult for them with the food supplies, because it takes, you know, effort for them to get any food, and volunteers help with that. In other parts to the south of Ukraine, to the south of Kharkiv and to the western part of the city where I live, there are shellings, but not as intensive. And it means that there is still electricity, heating, and there are few shops open. So it's possible to get food supplies. So it's more or less stable.
Your President Zelensky addressed the Australian Parliament this morning, saying that Russia must be held accountable for past wrongs. And you have been documenting what's happening in your city. You're bearing witness. Are you also gathering evidence for potential war crimes prosecution, Maria?
Well, for potential war crimes, this is now what the Ukrainian officials do. This the Office of Prosecutor and then the special bodies are responsible for that. So I think that my work is important in giving information to international audience about the crimes committed here in Ukraine, because people see with their own eyes what is happening. Because Russian officials continue denying that they shell civilians, that the residential areas, that the children are being killed. They lie in the eyes of, you know, of Europeans and international leaders, denying these facts. And that's why I think that this is so important to show the people all over the world what is it and what Russia is doing in Ukraine, because they will try in time to cover everything, to hide everything, and not to be responsible for that. And what I want personally is that every person who is committing war crimes in Ukraine will bear responsibility and will be held accountable for these crimes.
Maria, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Maria Avdiva, Director of Ukrainian think tank UA Expert, speaking to us from Kharkiv. And now we go to the town of Zaporizhia and to Belle True from the London Independent. Belle, thank you so much for joining us today. Zaporizhia is about 200 kilometres west of Mariupol. I'm wondering if you have any information on this humanitarian corridor today that we heard about, 45 buses expected to take people out of Mariupol. I know people will be concerned as to whether that will go ahead or not. What are you hearing?
Well, the latest that we've seen from the International Committee of the Red Cross is that they are in position, but they expect this possibly to happen tomorrow. Of course, there's been several promises of humanitarian convoys and corridors from Mariupol out, and they haven't happened and they haven't been successful in the past. Those areas have been shelled, according to Ukrainian officials. But this does seem to be possibly, you know, the best chance they have yet of getting large numbers of people out. I've been in Zaporizhia now for several days. I've been seeing civilians coming out of Mariupol, but they're doing it piecemeal in their own cars. Some of them are walking. There's been personal volunteers who've been risking their lives to come and bring these people out. They're coming out under heavy shelling. And they all told me the people who are vulnerable, who are elderly, who are disabled, who are wounded and not able to take those routes because it's far too dangerous. So the key thing about this humanitarian corridor will be that those kinds of people will be able to get out. We might see mass evacuations of civilians who've been living in horrendous circumstances for the last few weeks.
And what condition are the people in who you've met who've managed to escape?
The people I've met, they've their families, children, they've brought their cats, their dogs. They have been living underground, they've said, for 4 weeks. They told me in the first few days they were tapping their radiators for water, and then after that they were melting snow. In some instances they had access to springs. They'd have to run to them through shelling. They were running out of food. A woman I met yesterday said she had a single sack of potatoes left, and that's why she decided to go. I spoke to one woman who'd been injured in shelling as she had tried to cook herself a meal on a fire outside her house. She said that her elderly aunt was stuck upstairs during bombardment and basically burned to death. They're talking about mass graves, people digging up parks to be able to bury the dead hastily. And unfortunately, they said the death toll is probably higher than we could ever imagine, because there are so many bodies trapped under the rubble, and that aid agencies, you know, obviously non-existent, and civilians aren't able to get to those bodies. So we're talking about truly apocalyptic scenes. They've showed me videos and photos of their neighborhoods that are utterly destroyed, of heavy, you know, of Grad missiles being fired into heavily populated areas. It's really hard to get your head around the sort of horror, the nightmare that these people have been through.
And we've heard as well these reports that Russia shelled a Red Cross hospital in the city of Mariupol.
Yeah, so basically all civilian infrastructures come under attack, according to the people that I've spoken to. Homes, hospitals, schools, everything. People I said I spoke to in the last few days said they believe that as much as 80% of the city is now not standing, and that basically everything and anything is a target, and civilians are basically hiding underground as best they can in whatever places they can.
And where you are in Zaporizhia, how active is the Russian army there?
So in the centre of the city, there isn't any Russian forces. They are in the region of Zaporizhia. We do have air raid sirens, and there have been some hits here over the last month. But the fear is that this will be next. So there's a lot of preparation happening here in terms of defence, in terms of making sure that civilian infrastructure is protected. I'm actually talking to you from a hospital right now. So all the windows have, you know, been sandbagged up. There's, you know, that they're preparing for mass casualties, and they are saying that basically they know that they could be bombarded from the ground but also from the sky.
Belle, we'll let you go for now, but thank you very much for joining us. Belle True there from the London Independent in Ukraine. And coming up after this break, we'll speak to Scott Lucas, who's an associate at UCD's Clinton Institute and Professor Emeritus at the University of Birmingham, on the reports that Vladimir Putin simply doesn't know what's happening on the ground, and the mistrust around promises of a ceasefire.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
I'm joined on the line now by Scott Lucas, associate at UCD's Clinton Institute and Professor Emeritus at the University of Birmingham. Good morning, Scott. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Pleasure to be here.
Firstly, the reports that the Ukrainian government is sending these 45 buses to evacuate civilians in the city of Mariupol today, the besieged city, where the Russian Defence Ministry has announced a local ceasefire. Do you trust that the Russians will hold that ceasefire?
Oh, absolutely not. But that's based on the experience of multiple occasions in the past 5 weeks as Mariupol has been besieged, where there have been attempts by buses to get aid into the city and take civilians out. And on each occasion, the Russians have blocked the attempts. On some occasions, they've shelled the evacuees. They've only allowed, as Belle True was noting, private cars to leave the city. The latest that we have on that is that 17 of the 45 buses have left Zaporizhia, which is this city about a couple of hours to the northwest. There are another 28 buses that are trying to get past a Russian checkpoint outside the city. So, no, I'm afraid that until you actually see evidence that the buses have gotten in, that aid has been delivered, and that you finally have people, 160,000 civilians still trapped there, okay, people getting out, there's absolutely no trust when it comes to Moscow.
I'd also like you to attempt to clear the fog around these reports from the US and the EU that Vladimir Putin was completely misled by all the yes men around him who were afraid to tell him the truth about the war and how it was going. What should we take from that?
Well, it's not just the U.S. and the EU. It's also the director of the U.K.'s intelligence agency, GCHQ, who went on record with an Australian audience to said, yeah, that Vladimir Putin had not only been misled into thinking that there would be little Ukrainian resistance, that Ukrainians would welcome the Russians as liberators, and that Russian forces would be effective, but now that advisors are too scared to tell him that it's not going well. you know, take it with a grain of salt. Certainly, it's in the interest of the U.S., Europe, and other supporters of Ukraine to play up the Russian failures. But what we know and have confirmed is that the Russians have failed. They have failed in phase A of this operation, which was to get into Kyiv, the capital, quickly, and to detain, possibly kill Ukraine's leaders. And we have multiple reports, including from NATO, of up to 20% of Russia's invasion force is now lost. We have up to 20% of the troops who have been killed, captured, or are missing in action. You have a loss of 300 tanks, which is equivalent to the entire tank force of France, half that of the UK. And I think the biggest confirmation that the Russians are scrambling, whether or not Vladimir Putin wants to accept this, is that they, in effect, have called off the assault on Kyiv and north of Kyiv and Chernihiv. And as you heard earlier from Maria, they're now concentrating on the eastern part of Ukraine to try to grab as much land as they can hold.
And do you think that they have the capacity, the Russian military, and the will to carry on?
Well, I mean, certainly some of the forces will carry on. I mean, this is one of the largest invasion forces we've had in modern history. But the question is how many of those forces carry on. And that's not just a question of low morale amongst troops. You've got, from the start of this invasion, problems with supply and logistics in that the Russians could not get fuel, could not get vital equipment up to the front lines. And so what's happening is that some of the Russian armored equipment is having to go all the way back to Belarus, to the north of Ukraine, or to Russia to the east to try to replenish. And you just can't carry on a sustained operation that way. The Russians may be able to take Mariupol, you know, this port city that they have besieged for more than a month. But come on, if you can't take Mariupol after starving the population nearly to death, what chances are that you can take a sizable portion of the east and the south of Ukraine?
Scott, we'll leave it there for now, but we'd love to talk to you again. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme. That's Scott Lucas. We'll take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.